We now return to Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz with your hosts, Bill Hohlfeld and Joe Maniscalco.
I'll keep working my way back to you, babe, with a burning love inside.
And we're back right here on Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz. We've got some more good talk coming your way at AM 970, The Answer, where we talk about workers' struggles. Joe, who's going to talk to us next?
Right now, we're going to welcome Professor Richard Wolf to the show, who's been very patient. He's been listening to all the segments. Professor, just to let everybody know, you are an economics professor. You are founder of Democracy at Work. You're the host of Economic Update that everybody should tune into. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Joe. I'm glad to be here.
So oh, very interested. Sorry, Bill.
That's okay. I just wanted to say welcome aboard.
And getting your take, you've been hearing all the segments, everything that we've been talking about. Is there a correlation or what strikes you?
Absolutely. We're living in a time which all of the commentators you've had, the young lady in the high school, the worker at Spectrum on strike, the folks at Uber, they're all experiencing different aspects of the same thing. Ever since the Great Depression of the 1930s produced in this country an upsurge of labor. Labor movement organized the way it never had before, and it never has since, the CIO and all of that, you got some real results. If you put together the labor unions that formed in the 1930s, and you have to say it, the left-wing political organizations that worked with them in those union years, they produced tens of millions of people who went to the President of the United States, Franklin Roosevelt, and they said, you've got to do something for working people in this depression. You can't just bail out the banks, because they had done all that. You can't just help the big corporations and revive the stock market. You've got to do for the mass of people. And then they took the next step, and they said, if you don't, we won't vote for you, and you won't be the president much longer. It was tough. He wasn't the friend at first.
Mm. Let me ask you about that, because I think it's fairly common opinion that Roosevelt really was from the beginning with his earliest New Deal legislation in the corner of the workers. Are you saying that that's not as much the case as we think it is?
That's right. It really isn't.
Tell us a little bit about that. Good. That's good.
When he ran for president, he ran on a balanced budget. He didn't believe in spending extra to get out of a depression. He presented himself as somebody that no business person would be that opposed to. That's how he got in. He was doing the conventional thing. It wasn't that he was unusual. The whole point was he wasn't unusual. And he kind of hoped, like so many of them did, that this crisis would kind of clean itself up and he'd be able to coast. When that didn't happen, when the early 1930s became the horrible 1930s, 33 and 4, he sits there as the president and he's got to do something, because the labor movement saw literally millions of people who've never been in a union before, whose parents were not members of a union, decide that the best way for them to get through that depression was to join a union. And this changed American politics forever. And Roosevelt was a smart politician. He knew this was no bluff. He knew that those left-wing organizations, political parties, and the unions together were a voting bloc he could not ignore. So guess what happened? The middle of the 1930s, stuff happens real fast. Social Security. We never had that in America. That was created in the middle of the Depression when the government had no money. The mass of people got that government to say, we're going to take care of everybody who's over 65 years of age with a check every month for the rest of their lives. Something that the business community thought was crazy, could never be done, there was no money for it. Boom, it happened. Before the ink was dry, he came back and he said, I'm going to create an unemployment compensation system. We never had that before either. You lose your job through no fault of your own, we're going to give you a check for a year or two to see you through these hard times. Then he passed the first minimum wage law that had ever been passed in the United States to make sure that nobody worked at a wage that made it impossible to live. And then the big one, which I've left for last, he created a public employment program. Between 1934 and 1941, they created and filled 15 million jobs for people who, therefore, because they weren't unemployed anymore, could pay their mortgage off, could take care of their families. And how did the government, in the midst of a depression, when nobody's paying taxes because you got everybody unemployed, blah, 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 where'd the money come from to do these enormous things? And here comes the answer I can't tell the American people often enough. He taxed corporations and the rich. That's what he did.
You can't do that.
let me really play with this a minute. He raised the taxes on them big time. Big time. And he said to them, I'm only not raising them even more because you're going to lend the government the money to do all these things for working people. And guess what? He went back to the rich people because that's where he comes from, right? He comes from the family that had a president earlier. And he said to the rich corporations, I just cut a deal with these unions and these socialists and all the rest of it. But I'm advising you, the government hasn't got the money to do what I've promised those people I'm going to do. You do. So you got to give it to me. And I advise you to do it, because if you don't, you may not have much money much longer to give anybody. Half of them saw what he was saying. Half of them hated him for it, never forgave him. But half went along. That's all he needed. So that's what we did in America. And when people say, you can't do that, I like to remind them, Roosevelt did it. And he's the most popular president in the history of the United States. Nobody ever got reelected three times the way he did. So don't tell me it can't be done. Don't tell me we can't do that now in the second worst collapse of capitalism since the Great Depression. It can be done. It's a question of whether people will make this kind of thing happen. And now to the point you raised at the beginning. The reason it isn't happening now is because we don't have that upsurge from labor and the rest of the community that supports labor, because then even a Mr. Trump would have to do it, because otherwise he's history. That's the missing thing. That's what made it happen in the 1930s.
So what do we do? What do we do to make that upsurge happen once again? Because you're right, it's absolutely not going on today.
Right. We've got to do the work to take these stories like you're doing. You're doing the work that has to be done. The story of Uber, the story of Spectrum, the story of the fast food industry, that should have, as it did in the 30s, people in the streets. You've got to do that, because then everybody who thinks sympathetically will see all those people acting and begin to let that part of their brain come out. If you don't mobilize the people, you leave it to the folks who got the money and got the organization, and we all know who they are. That's why they have a blackout, as was explained to us. That's why nobody knows. That's why they cut it out. That's why they flood the airwaves. They spend a lot of time and money mobilizing opinion. If the labor movement and its allies don't do the same, they will be defeated. And that's what's going on now. They're being defeated because they don't have what they could do. And one last point. Someone once said to me, you can never beat the Republicans and the Democrats. They've got the money all sewed up from the political blah, blah. One of the things that Bernie Sanders campaign showed us, remember, this amazing thing where millions of people gave an average, I believe it was, of $27 a head, showing that if you get enough people, which you did, and they only give 27, you can begin to match the big bucks that the large. So it turns out we can do it. The question is, do we have the commitment? Do we have the engine to do it? I think the people, from my experience, they're out there and they're ready to go, but they need the inspiration, they need the information, they need some leadership, and then they'll come.
Okay. Well, we saw after the last AFL-CIO convention this past year, they kind of made little small indications that they were fed up of the duopoly and they were ready to do something different. How likely do you think that is?
Well, I think, I have my disagreements with Bernie and all that. He's not perfect, but he opened his space. I mean, I think we all have an enormous debt. He understood something that he could be. Well, let me tell you a story. I know several people that are fairly high up in the Democratic Party, and I asked one of them at the beginning of the race when he was just entering, what do you think Bernie Sanders' chances are? He said, we don't worry about that. If he gets 2%, he'll be lucky.
Yeah.
Right? So clear. And this guy's high up. And he's a smart guy and, all that. I think he was even friendly to Bernie, but that was his judgment of a professional judge. They had no idea.
Yeah, all the pundits were wrong.
Yeah, they all had no idea how deep that support goes, how far it went. And as many people have commented since, he was making an appeal that wasn't so different to many people from the one that Trump made. He was kind of the left wing, where Trump was the right wing version of trying to make a change to break it open a little bit. I think we have a lot to work with in the United States. It certainly is my experience. I think we need to kind of get out from under the last half century of being a depressed, shrinking labor movement and feeling bad, which I understand. But we kind of break out of that and begin to get our moxie back and realize that there's a large number of people out there that feel the way we do. They're like us, a little scared, a little shy of movement. But if we do it, I think they will surprise us all.
Bill, I think that's a great, unfortunately, we have to leave it there. I think that's a great way to leave it for this week. We have to go to your spotlight on American labor history.
But, Professor, before I do that, I gotta get a promise out of you that you're going to come back and speak with us again.
It's a short commute for me. I'd be glad to come.
Okay. Well done. Today's spotlight on American labor history. February the 18th, 1688. Was the first anti-slavery protest in America. That was the day that the Germantown Quakers gathered to petition against slavery in the first documented anti-slavery protest in the United States. Quaker colonists in Barbados began to question slavery in the 1670s. By 1688, founder of Germantown, Francis Daniel Pastorius, and three other Quakers met at Thone Kunde's house to craft a petition. They urged their fellow congregants to abolish slavery. The petition detailed its opposition to the importation, sale, and ownership of slaves. Rooted in the Golden Rule, do unto others as they would do unto you, the men questioned why Christians would own slaves when they would not own each other. They argued that slaves had broad universal rights, including the right to engage in slave revolt in order to achieve their freedom. Over the course of the next century, Quakers in Germantown would craft stronger anti-slavery petitions that influenced the broader Quaker community in Philadelphia to take a formal stand, and they formally banned the ownership of slaves at their Philadelphia yearly meeting in 1776. Throughout the region, Quakers routinely raised funds for those who had escaped bondage to start new lives and help them to integrate into Quaker communities. Quakers would continue to play a prominent and active role in the abolitionist movement and the Underground Railroad.
Bill, that does it for another episode of Blue Collar Buzz. I want to thank all of our guests and also remind everybody, if you like us, follow us on Twitter at LaborPressNY. And don't forget to tune in next time at Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz here on AM 970 The Answer.